Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Hansen, and today we have our very first actual founder interview with Dr. John Lensing of OpenLoop. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So to start, why don't we go through a little bit about your background and how you went from physician to entrepreneur and startup founder, and we'll jump into the journey a little bit of OpenLoop and where you see OpenLoop going in the future, and we'll take it from there.
Sure thing. Sounds great. Quick background about myself. I am originally from a small little rural town in Iowa called Pella, best known for Dutch people, tulips, and windows, interestingly enough. Then I went off to Grand Rapids, Michigan, small liberal arts college called Calvin for undergrad, studied sciences when I was up there, and ended up starting my first company, doing a lot of stuff within the drone space. Once I graduated, I exited that business, sold off to one of my partners, and then came back to the University of Iowa then for medical school. I missed the startup scene, so I joined a ag tech startup as VP of research for them. Was in that position for 2 years, helped secure a lot of state and federal grant funding. We're doing work with livestock health analytics, and then eventually left that just to focus on my studies. Ended up graduating, matched into plastic and reconstructive surgery back in Michigan for residency, started down that pathway, but simultaneously it also started OpenLoop as a passion project to really address a lot of the accessibility issues that I was seeing within healthcare, particularly within rural communities like my hometown. And interestingly enough, I was planning on running that on the side throughout residency, but then saw enough growth and traction with the company where it made sense for me to jump into it full time. Told my program director during intern year, said, hey, I think I could have a larger impact on healthcare by doing this startup. And we left on good terms. So never where I thought I'd end up, Greg, but it's been quite the ride nonetheless.
Did you end up leaving residency, so your intern year, did you do that once you raised capital? Or was it even before you guys went out and raised, I don't know if you did a pre-seed or a seed round first? Was there a little bit of a de-risking before you left residency, or was it, hey, this is growing, we haven't raised capital yet, I'm just going to jump ship and take that big risk on?
It's a good question. If I remember right, during that time, I had commitments for about $500,000 in a pre-seed round, but I had funded the company primarily through some leftover student loans that I had, so bootstrapped it that way. And we had signed our first few clientele. We had started generating revenue. And I think we had made maybe $50,000 or $60,000. And it came pretty quickly, to be honest. And so I thought, okay, here, I guess there is some demand for the product and service that we're delivering. It's early enough in my professional career. Like, why not take the risk, jump into it? But I think this, then once I dropped out, raised and banked the $500,000 from some angels, and then I think my salary that first year was $35,000. So I took a 50% pay cut from residency anyway.
Yeah, that's definitely it's a bold move, right? You've done kind of the entrepreneur game already and realized that one of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast is the insane amount of value creation that startup founders can create in a very short amount of time. And so originally, OpenLoop, from what I remember, so I think we first came to know about OpenLoop, my wife and I, through the Matter Network, I think you guys were involved with that. We got involved very quickly with Matter, and then we weren't in the Midwest, so we stopped using their services. But I remember hearing about OpenLoop, and from what I remember, you guys had originally gone after a different market than what you're currently in, if I'm not mistaken. What was the original idea that you guys had that you started with OpenLoop?
Yeah, no, that's a great memory. We actually started off as a tech-enabled staffing company meant for critical access hospitals and federally qualified health centers, so large rural clinics. And backtracking a little bit, we were seeing patients drive 4 to 5 hours one way to get the care they needed, particularly in Iowa. And so the root cause of that is obviously just not enough physicians, nurse practitioners, nurses, whole clinician types across the board in the country. And for us, we knew that we weren't going to meaningfully increase the size of the workforce. We were just going to magically add another million physicians across the U.S. overnight. But as our colleagues have additional availabilities within their schedule, especially since private practices have gotten bought up and physicians have gone to employed, team members. And so with that, sometimes Tuesday mornings are open, Thursday afternoons, patient cancellations around the lunch hour. And so for us, it became this question of how do you take a pre-existing clinical pool and make them more efficient with their day? And so the original idea for Open Loop was, hey, let's build this tech-enabled staffing platform. We will enroll various clinician types within high-density metropolitan areas, but then within a 1 to 2 hour driving radius outside of their home base, it's very likely that there are other rural clinics and smaller hospitals that could use those open blocks of time that they have, and we would pair them up with these people. So not a redistribution of resources, but a reimagining the efficiency of a clinical resource. And so we ended up launching that in early 2020, saw pretty great traction and adoption within that. So right before the pandemic, and then over the course of about 4 months, we scaled to 26 major health systems here in the Midwest, encompassing about 100 locations. We were hyper-focused on the physician market, and so we grew to about 1,000 physicians utilizing the platform over that period. And then I believe over that same four-month block, we ended up covering about 700 shifts. But ultimately, it turned out to be a great, fun little experiment because then COVID ended up crashing our market. And so sat around for the next 3 months, twiddling our thumbs, wondering what the hell we're going to do at this time period. Like, I was already in it full time, and I was like, did I make a mistake? maybe I should just go back and do what I know. But then ultimately found our footing because we saw digital health just dramatically take off at the end of 2020. And so with that's where we pivoted and moved into and really haven't looked back since.
So do you guys have any amount of that legacy product left over in terms of doing those kind of covered shifts, or is it completely phased out and you guys are now focused on kind of the new Open Loop?
So it's interesting. I think our core competency when we moved into the digital health space still was in that staffing fractional workforce type model. And so that's what we started doing. A lot of these digital health companies, because they were scaling so quickly and so rapidly, they didn't have the bodies necessary to see the patient demand that they were having, and let alone manage all the compliance aspects about the licensure across states for these virtual clinicians. And so that was really our foray into the digital health space. But it became very apparent then thereafter that, hey, they needed full compliance. They needed full legal infrastructure to move state by state. They didn't have scalable technology from an electronic health record perspective, because every EMR to date had been built for brick and mortar, confined to a single geographic region with a fixed group of clinicians. So they didn't have scalable technology. They didn't have the ability to order imaging sets or labs to various vendors. And so we started layering on all these different product lines and services to build what we have now. And the easiest way to describe that is it's the full infrastructure stack for clinical operations. And we do it all on a white label basis. So purely meant for digital health initiatives. The only thing remaining of our legacy stack is the ability to manage a clinical workforce and utilize our network that we've built to help power a lot of our partners. But as far as any in-person work, we have stayed away from that.
Makes sense in this new kind of post-COVID world, given that telehealth is definitely not going to go away. A lot of these digital health companies are raising a fair amount of money still. So it seems like you guys are now basically, there's two, I feel like, main competitors within this space, right? It's you guys as Open Loop and then Wheel. So Wheel, pretty well capitalized, raised over $300 million or $200 million, whatever it is. Tell me a little bit about where you guys see opportunity, especially coming into the space where it definitely seems like a space that's not necessarily winner takes all. It might be winner takes most, maybe. But where do you see Open Loop being well positioned? And then how has it been so far since you guys just raised a fairly large Series A from, at least Crunchbase is telling me that. Where is that money going towards in terms of building out more solutions? And just like from the competitive and strategic point of view, where do you see Open Loop going forward?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think having a big incumbent player in the space already, we were the latecomer. And so it's forced us to be more economical with our decisions. It's forced us to be more strategic in carving out our own niche and finding that differentiator. And I think we've both very well carved out our own specific domains. It's rare that we actually end up bumping into each other any longer. I've heard different things that Wheel might be moving in a different direction, more technologically focused. And I think that's a great move. For us, our core competency revolves around clinician management and workforce management. And so we'll continue to double down on that. Our demand only continues to grow. I think we've made some very strategic, smart bets that have paid off within the past couple of years that we're finally starting to see come to fruition. We're starting to see the ROI on those. And so those have been great. One of the biggest things for us is the ability to bill insurance as a multi-specialty group. We've gone out, we've contracted with a handful of insurance carriers across the country, from government plans to commercial plans, from regional plans to national level plans, and offering patients that we see the ability to accept their insurance rather than have to pay cash, pay for a lot of these telehealth services, has been just an eye-opening unlock for the industry. So we're very excited about that line. There's some other big areas that we're looking at. Nothing too differentiated from what we're currently doing, but I think we're investing into some product lines and service lines that would allow us to penetrate into tangential markets. So right now, a lot of our competencies revolve around D2C or B2B2C type telehealth companies, virtual first, no brick and mortar, a lot of retailers, lab and diagnostic companies. But then there's some work within brick and mortar that we see as a very large potential avenue that we'd like to move into here within the next 12 to 18 months, would be my guess. As far as the funding goes, though, Greg, a lot of that, the interesting thing is, the majority of the product that we build is internally facing stuff, right? It's for clinician managers, for compliance, it's for regulatory purposes, internal process efficiency, decrease the amount of manpower that's needed to get a task done. And so in a lot of ways, we are our own largest client. And so we are consistently iterating on that product. And a lot of the strategic areas are going to increase that efficiency of our clinical teams, of our operational teams. And so that's where a lot of the spend is going. It's also a great time to sign deals, right? One of my favorite sayings that I picked up over the past few years is, it's easier to pass 20 cars in rain than in sunshine. And given this market recession, it's time to double down. It's time to put the pedal to the floor and see what we can do. Really excited about all the work that our team is doing. Continue to capitalize on growth and all the opportunities that are in front of our face, but meanwhile, consistently building a stable foundation from an operational perspective.
Yeah, I definitely like what you guys are doing in terms of, instead of focusing on one specific task like credentialing and licensing, you guys are basically building out the full stack for companies to say, we can run our entire platform through OpenLoop, which I think is not necessarily how founders think in terms of building more verticalized niche specialty specific things versus having a platform where you can just plug in and have a lot of the things that are headaches for a lot of companies just disappear, which is really cool.
Yeah. And to touch on that, that's a great point. And I think it's one that founders need to understand. There are so many point solutions within digital health right now, and they all don't talk to each other. So you're spending hours, days, years of time trying to integrate all these different point solutions to build your operational capacity that you need. And it takes so much time that a lot of these companies are going out there and being like, I'm just going to do it myself then, if it's going to take so much time to try to piece together these 30 or 40 different solutions. And the problem with that, Greg, is the fact that healthcare in and of itself has historically been horizontally integrated, right? A health system, you take, for example, their credentialing's in-house, their billing's in-house, their physician group might be external, but they're solely contracted with one physician group, so it acts as an internal thing. And so everything has always been there on this horizontal level at the health system level. And when you're trying to get a care delivery company off the ground, a telehealth company, somebody who's going to deliver care to patients, all those pieces have to be in place before you even see your first patient. But nobody wants to spend a year and a half, 2 years building out all of that back-end compliance stuff, the clinician network, the EHR, the credentialing, the licensing, the malpractice, the insurance components, just to be able to see their first patient deliver on the value prop that they set out and built their company upon, right? I think it's really important for other founders out there, other people who are interested in doing that, is look at the industry that you're trying to innovate and disrupt. And there's some things that you can disrupt upon, but there's other components that you have to maintain status quo if you want to integrate with a pre-existing industry.
Yeah, I would say the company that comes to mind in terms of how you're building out OpenLoop is a pretty company to have come in mind, but it's like something like Deel, right? So the one HR platform you'll ever need. It seems like you're doing that for a lot of these digital health companies that are coming through. And actually, that's the next big question I have is, In terms of demand for different specialties, whether it's physicians or NPs, I'm guessing you guys have NPs and PAs potentially on the platform as well that you work with. What areas are you seeing the most demand for right now from like the physician-specific specialties? Is it mental health? Is it orthopedic surgery or neurology or something like that? Or is it still primary care that most people are building within to and then coming to you and saying, hey, we need help with this white-labeled solution?
Telehealth is an interesting beast because it is very niche. And when I say niche, I mean you see companies that are focusing on a very particular comorbidity. Like they might just be focused on type 2 diabetes. They might be focused on fertility or hormone replacement therapy or allergy treatment, whatever it might be. So they're very, very niche. But a lot of the primary care physicians and nurse practitioners, this is within their average day anyway within the health system. And so primary care, I think, will always be a large driver of demand within the telehealth domain, but it's not primary care in the traditional sense of all-encompassing obstetrics and pediatrics and geriatrics, but more of these are just generalized smaller conditions that primary care doc can service. So that's one area. Mental health, I think, will always be a very large player, very high growth area. Actually, the growth has plateaued a little bit, but that's because I think they've reached their pinnacle. But a lot of mental health stuff being treated there, I think that is the most efficacious and scalable way to treat mental health conditions, both from a psychiatric perspective as well as a therapy perspective. So you see both the MDs and the psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners, as well as more of the clinical social worker side. So all those components getting rolled up into mental and behavioral health. And the other interesting component is over the past 2 years, you didn't see many specialties within the telehealth space. But now that we're entering this telehealth 2.0 phase, where we're just shifting away from telehealth being Zoom appointments with your primary care doc into a more like wholly integrated solution with at-home devices for monitoring, other additional resources, a tech perspective, including like apps, walking through with reminders on patients what to do, as well as the clinical care component. This telehealth 2.0 phase has really allowed for the flourishing of deeper management of chronic conditions, thereby enter a lot of specialties. So dermatology is growing because those are some pretty quick fixes within that space. Pulmonology, cardiology, endocrinology, GI, big one. Most surgical subspecialties have stayed out. Obviously hard to do those virtually. Neurology, particularly within the migraine space, that seems to be a big one. And then allergy and immunology is for a lot of allergists work out there. And then some fertility, so like REI.
So that brings up another question that you're seeing a lot of these companies come through and working with you guys. And I'm guessing you're also able to see some of their growth patterns. And so the way that I think about somebody like Stripe is I think they have a venture arm now where they have so much visibility into what startups are growing, how fast they're growing, how fast their revenue is growing. Are you doing any angel investing on the side with some of the companies that you're seeing come through Open Loop? Or is that you're staying away from that?
That's a great point. It's one that I think about often because a lot of these companies, we are their first touch point, right? Even during their pre-product phase. So when they're still in an idea, and it's very easy for us to aggregate and be like, okay, this is the next wave of of telemedicine. Here's what we're seeing a lot of demand within. I personally have not done any angel investing within this, primarily one, because I think if we ended up working with that client, it might be some sort of conflict of interest for me, unfortunately. But actually, probably the more important reason is that I still have student loans that I got to pay off. So surplus cash flow angel investing, I don't have that kind of timeline or that kind of liquidity yet for that activity.
So I'm assuming then in the Series A, you didn't take any secondary off the table.
Money has never been a big driving motivator for me, but I also have pretty high confidence in my abilities. So I'm like, just let it ride. If it went to zero tomorrow, then that's fine. I'll start something else. I'll do something else again. But if it takes off, then I'll do something cool with it later down the road.
I guess that's another general question for you then in terms of like where you see this ultimately going. You're what, 4 years into this kind of journey, this startup journey? You just raised a Series A relatively recently. Is this something that you want to see go to fruition, get out into the public markets, or do you see this as more an exit opportunity before then, or are you just keeping your kind of nose down and just keep grinding?
So we've been at about 2.5 years only now, so still very early in our life cycle. I do truly fundamentally believe that we have the opportunity to take this company public, given the work that we're doing, given the growth of our industry, our positioning within it. I think there is a very clear pathway to an IPO in our future. Now, if we actually get to that point, it's a completely different story. I think from a founder perspective, there's only a slim, maybe 1 to 2 times in a founder's life that you have the opportunity to take a company public. And if you do have that opportunity, you seize it with anything you can. And so I think for myself, I'd like to steer the company in that direction. However, there's always great exit opportunities via acquisition, merger, whatever that might be. And really for us at the leadership level here at Open Loop, we will go whatever direction we think best enables and best aligns with our mission and vision. And that's to continuously improve community health outcomes to accelerate delivery of medical services with this grand vision of delivering healing anywhere. And so if a strategic acquirer came around that had the same mindset as us, that could help us reach scale and deliver the impact that we're hoping to have quicker, then that is something that would be very hard to argue against.
Going back to that Series A raise, actually, how long ago was that raise? How much did you raise, if you're willing to share? And then maybe if you can give us some thoughts around how hard in this market was it to go out and raise a fair amount of capital? Was it an inside round? Was it external people coming in to join the round?
It was an external round. So net new lead. The lead was a group called Nava Ventures, founded by Freddie Martinetti. They're dual headquartered out of San Francisco as well as New York. Freddie, it's a newer fund. Freddie had actually just left Highland Capital Partners to start his own venture fund. Phenomenal team over there. They've just been excellent to work with. They led the round. We raised a total of 15 in equity and then paired that with a pretty significant amount of debt, which brought us north of 25, 30 million in total funding for that round in completion. The market's strange. The interesting part is that a lot of, for lack of better terms, trash companies were funded over the past 2 years within healthcare because it was all the rage. It was a big boom with COVID. And so anybody that said they were doing anything within healthcare immediately got funding overnight. And so this pullback because of the recession within funding of the digital health space, I think it's actually a great thing. One, it's gonna toughen founders to make sure that they actually have product market fit, that there's a desirable market for the idea that they're bringing, that customers actually like them, that their product is scalable and has positive unit economics. And so I think it's a great forcing function for a lot of people to weed out bad ideas. I think for those companies that are growing very quickly, still in the midst of these economic headwinds, it's going to make funding opportunities easier in a way for them, right? They're going to look a lot more favorable in the midst of some ones that are struggling. And investors are still sitting on a lot of dry powder. Their LPs, their partners that gave them money, expect them to deploy it, and they have to deploy it in a company that looks good. So those that are still growing have solid traction. I think they're going to find funding opportunities no matter the economic season. So that being said, I'd focus on your numbers. I'd stick with your nose down to the grindstone. I think a lot of people get caught up in the founder narrative or the founder story, and they like the idea of just being a founder rather than actually getting the work done that a founder needs to get done. And the round wasn't any more difficult. I think we were on a great growth trajectory that ended up being easier than any other round for us.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's a good point too, is like the founders that are kind of like tourists that are just coming in and saying, hey, it's cool to be a founder, let me go found a company, and then aren't necessarily building anything of value, or they're just slow to ship. And it's just, hey, I'm just a founder, I just want to put that on my LinkedIn page or something like that. And you guys recently, is this your first acquisition that you guys made of this? Is it Imaging Panda? Is that what that was?
We've done two. So we acquired a group called Reliant MD. there was some tech and some people there that we wanted. So we wrapped that up. And then in very short order, we also acquired Imaging Panda, both enablers of our core business and great add-on bolt-ons that we just needed to continue running anyway.
Very excited about funding for those, or was that before the Series A raise?
That was after the raise, if I remember right. But they were very low cash cost to us, to be honest with you, Greg.
Very nominal involvement there. Just very unique deal structures, a little bit of equity, a little royalty stuff, a little cash mix.
I think all parties were happy with the results on those.
Nice. And then for the physicians out there that are listening to this, if they're interested in working with you guys, how does that look? So you have a primary care physician that's listening to this and saying, hey, how can I get involved with telehealth, with Open Loop? Do they get to choose which companies they go into white labeled solutions for? How does that actually work from the physician side as like a recruiting pitch to those out there?
It's a very white glove experience. We're physician founded. Majority of our executive team are clinicians at heart. And then across the board, we have nurses, we have therapists, we have techs, we have NPs that are former clinicians that now enjoy the work that we're doing at Open Loop. So I wanted to join as more as an operator. But for those that might be interested in working with us, seeing what telehealth all has to offer, we're trying to bring back the golden days of medicine for you all. The eat what you kill, the lack of bureaucracy that goes with it. So feel free to go over to our website, openloophealth.com, sign up. One of our clinician advocates will then be in touch with you. We can manage all of your credentials. We can get you licensed up, all the malpractice flowing through you guys, flowing through us. And then we have a whole host of opportunities. And so the beauty of telehealth and the beauty of working with us is you can curate exactly what you're looking for. You know, if you're a primary care doc and you have an interest in geriatrics, or you have an interest in allergy treatments, or an interest in weight loss or diabetes, whatever that might be, we can help tailor your actual schedule and visit types to have a larger emphasis on the things that you're passionate about. So feel free to look us up, sign up, and then hopefully I'll work with some of you all in the future.
All right, final question for you. Are you guys implementing, researching, doing a little R&D with anything for ChatGPT-4 and all of the AI craze that's hit medicine now with a lot of players moving very quickly? You guys integrating any AI features into homegrown EMRs, licensing, anything that you can share?
It is a very interesting area, and it has been a topic of conversation with our clinical teams as well as our product teams and our executive leadership team. I think there is a very big role for AI within healthcare, but I think it needs to be reined in. I think oftentimes we become too reliant on a technology. The advent of more diagnostic imaging has pushed us away from the physical exam, which is essentially obsolete nowadays. If we solely rely on ChatGPT to do an intake of all symptomology and full H&P and then use its differential, that takes away from the actual art of medicine, the pattern recognition that we were all trained in. And then I think it loses that human component, that empathetic portion that really makes healthcare what it is. And so there is a limited role for it, although it might be broad role for it. So we are looking at some different ways to interact with it, potentially on the intake side, potentially to hold some patients over on an urgent care type setting if they have very limited symptomology, giving them the resources they need right away for some just at-home remedies or some over-the-counter things that they could take until they could get triaged by an actual clinician. There's also some other interesting plays for us within like claim denials, claim filing with insurance companies, and putting reasons in there and seeing what kind of reasoning it spits out. So we've been testing some stuff. We haven't gone live with anything yet, but I'm very curious to see how a lot of this evolves over the next 12 months.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting space that people are definitely building in now. It's going to be interesting to see. I keep a pretty close eye on the Y Combinator companies coming through. I think there was 4 or 5 that were building within healthcare and AI. I'm assuming that's going to go up in the summer. Definitely interesting. Is there anything else you want to plug before we end the podcast? Any openings?
I have 100 positions open right now, I think, at the company. So if you guys are, if there's anybody listening that's looking for a shift in career, wants to join a high growth, energetic, young company, feel free to jump over to openloophealth.com/careers. And you can find a lot of our careers on that page.
The other thing too is I think innovation and disruption is really driven by those that have a familiarity with the industry that they're working within. And so for other clinicians out there, those that have encountered problems on a day-to-day basis and you have this unsettling feeling in your stomach or looking for a higher purpose and you think that you could help solve a lot of these issues, just do it. Start working on it, start figuring things out, because that's the only way things actually change is if the people working within that actually want to make a change. Clinicians and hospital administration always inherently have friction points. And so the only way to change that is doing something about it. So step out of your comfort zone a little bit, jump into the business side of it, because nobody understands patient care better than you guys do. And if you can learn the business side of it, then that's a winning combo, in my opinion.
Yeah. If you listen to the podcast, if you listen to previous episodes, that's definitely something I agree with. If you're a physician or a clinician out there that's looking to solve your own problem, reach out. I will love to see a deck and potentially put a check in also. John, thanks for coming on and talking about Open Loop, and maybe we can have you back on once you raise that Series B.
Sounds great. Thanks, Greg. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thanks. You too. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate Podcast.